Hi, this is Bruce Gernon, author of The Fog, a never-before-published theory of the Bermuda Triangle phenomenon, and you're listening to the radio show podcast Out There.
This week I bring back a guest who's been on once before. Welcome to Out There. My guest is Byron Lacy. He's out of Texas. I think he said Nacogdoches. Is that how you say it, Byron? Nacogdoches?
Yes, Nacogdoches.
Texas. And I'm thinking, wonder where that is. And it turns out that's where in that general area, the space shuttle blew up in that when it was coming back in. But I mean, I forgot all about that. So Byron has been on before. He wrote a book, Chosen: Chronicles of an Alien Abductee. He's also written a poetry book and a science fiction book. He's got a pretty amazing story to tell. I'm looking at his bio because there's so much to it. But recently, we've been going back and forth, and it all started because he wished me happy birthday on Facebook. And then I thought, you know, I'd like to talk to Byron again. So how you doing, Byron?
I'm doing very good.
The last I talked to you, we had discovered that we discussed that you were an alien abductee going back to a very, very early age, right?
Yes, 5 years old.
And maybe before that. Now, are they still taking you?
Yes.
And
they
go ahead.
They take me. Most of the visits are in my room, and I don't remember, but I find strange punctures and bruises and marks, and sometimes I feel like I haven't slept, and I can tell they've been here.
And who is taking you, you think?
The ones I've seen have been grays, usually under the command of a mantis.
A mantis?
Now, a mantis creature that comes, the ones that come into my house, and the ones that have taken me into a ship. Then I've seen other beings which look more like they're made out of light.
And this is what is going to be interesting, because the last show we did, you kind of left me thinking that you were, which was amazing stories, but that you were taken by the grays like so many people. But really, you have a connection to another group, and that's what this interview is going to be about. And when did you realize that this was not a group from space, so to speak?
Well, it was told to me before I realized. It was told to me by a psychic that I was actually taken into another dimension, and that towards the end of the tape, she does a reading and sends you a tape of it. Towards the end of the tape, she said, now this may sound strange, but you're an alien soul in a human body. And then she sort of laughed. And over the year, that was in, I think, 2014. Over the year, I can't say if that's the right year or not, but anyway, over that year, everything she told me came true. And I'm sitting there going, everything has come true. And I thought she was a little bit out in the ethers when she said I was an alien soul, but maybe that's correct, and I need to think about it. So anyway, I decided to meditate on it, and I did. I meditated on the fact that I might be an alien soul in a human body. I thought about it from as many different angles as I could. I even thought, what if we're here to take over the world? And then I went, at least I'd be on the alien side. And then I thought, what if I really don't look like this at all? What if I look horrible? And then I'm going, if that's the way I look, I'd be used to it. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't bother me.
Right.
So I went through all these things, and then all of a sudden I just really, I knew it to be true, because all my life I have felt out of place, mm-hmm. completely out of place. Mm-hmm. I look at people and I sometimes wonder how they can do the things they do. I felt as a child like somebody had left me on my parents' doorstep. They were completely different from me. And suddenly I knew intellectually that it was true, and I felt in my feelings, and I'm going to use the word emotionally, I felt emotionally that it was true. And at that point, the minute that happened, it sort of like was like a little flashbulb going off in my head of thought. It wasn't real light, but ching, I knew it to be true. Mm. And at that point, it was like two fingers were shoved up into, and it didn't hurt, were shoved up at the very back of my skull where the spine and the skull meet, and it went up into my brain, and I felt it grab a hold of me inside, and my soul or my spirit, whatever you want to call it, and I felt myself being removed from my body, and my ego was going, hey, I want to go too. I want to go too. And I said, I don't think you're going to get to. And it didn't. And then I was standing in this immense blackness that you could see in. There wasn't a sun, but you could see anything you needed to see, and you could see everything. And in front of me, there was a wall made of a geometric pattern of light that stretched infinitely up and down and to both sides. And on that, or in front of that, were three beings, and they were sitting in chairs. Now, once again, all of this is made out of light, not of material things. But they're sitting in these chairs, and I can tell they're 7 or 8 feet tall, and it looked like they might even have robes on. And the impression I got was if they were physical, they would be like Gandalf or something like mm-hmm. that, you know, the big beard. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if they have beards or not. Actually, they wouldn't there. And me, I'm this little bitty sphere of light. And one of them, first off, in my head, I hear the Council of Three. Mm-hmm. That's all. That I hear in my head. Actually, my head was back in my bedroom. So I hear the Council of Three, and then one of them, and I knew he was speaking for everyone in the three, at least the three. He said, we've been waiting for you to figure this out. Mm. We're very proud of you. And then this wind, which had been a mild breeze, it turned into this huge wind, but it's a wind made out of love instead of air. Mm-hmm. And it just blasted through me, and it was all around. It was everywhere. And then this noise starts. Well, it wasn't really a noise. This thing starts pouring into my head, and it reminded me later of the way a computer would make this sound when you had to use dial-up to get on the internet.
Yeah, the modem sound it would make.
Yes.
Yeah.
All
that stuff. That's a great sound.
And, yes, it was like tons. It was pictures. It was words. It was little movie clips. It was just all this crap going through my head, and it was going so fast. Well, it wasn't crap, actually. It was good information. Mm-hmm. All this stuff was going through my head so fast, and then it stopped. And at that point, I started moving backwards because somehow I had a spatial orientation of forwards and backwards, even though I was a sphere. I started moving. They were gone, and I saw this. It looked like my standing profile. Or a cookie cutout to my shape, my whole body, mm-hmm. only flat, about 4 inches thick, and it looked like it was made of fog or plasma, and it started coming towards me, and at that point, I could sense that I was about to enter my body, and we both went into my body together. Hmm. Now, this was my higher self,
oh,
or okay. my my ascended self.
Okay.
And I was told that by a psychic very shortly after that that's what happened. And my abilities, my precognitive abilities increased greatly for a while, especially. And over time, I started getting these thoughts that were sort of weird to me. And then I realized that the information they had given me was beginning to surface. Mm. That barrage of stuff was beginning to come at me. And the first one of them, after I knew what they were, that hit me, happened during meditation. And it related to some of the pictures I had seen, because I saw pictures of gold and of money and different things like that. And it said, and I didn't say it, but this thing said in my head, the interest on loans are the chains to your slavery.
Mm.
Get out of debt.
Mm.
And it felt so profound, and it made so much sense, that I started working, and over the next year and a half to 2 years, I got completely out of debt.
Good for you. And that all makes a lot of sense to me as you're telling that story. And so it's only been a few years that you really started to realize, before you saw yourself as this alien abductee, and now in the last few years you see yourself as this being who probably hasn't had many or any other incarnations on this planet, but your incarnations, if there have even been incarnations, your existence has been in another place, hasn't it?
Yes. I've been here once.
You've been here
and
once?
And I had in the 70s, when I started meditating when I was 21, and or 22. And in the 70s, about 76 or 77, I was meditating and had a lot of things happen during meditation at that time. But suddenly I was a woman. I was in a hut made of rock, a structure made of rock. And I was wearing fur. That's what, there wasn't cloth. There was next to nothing as far as technology, apparently. So I was in the Stone Age, or even before the Stone Age, but then that image was gone. I've been told by the same psychic, she reads for David Icke, okay. Carol Clark.
Okay.
And she told me I was here during Lemuria, and it was a vastly different place. We didn't really have war. We didn't have crime. We didn't have a lot of things like that. And she said that it's really been a shock for me to come back this second time, because it wasn't what I was actually picturing.
Hmm. You know, I've heard things about Lemuria before, and I believe Lemuria was, there was also, you know, you sound like, you know, it was primitive, but I think there were very enlightened souls that were here. And I think Lemuria, Atlantis, and what was the other one? There were three lands that were, had very enlightened souls on it, and understood how to manipulate energy to create whatever they needed. And they really didn't need as much. But then you also had, yeah, you also had during the times of Atlantis, from what I understand and believe, and we've done, you know, we've done channeling, and we've done just many different things. I've talked to psychics, but channeling to me is a good way to get to some truth. And Atlantis destroyed itself with some weapons that they were experimenting with. They brought the rains down, and they caused the ground to shake or whatever, and the floods. And you had a combination. You had enlightened souls that were trying to advance, and then you also had souls. It was kind of split, the materialistic, like you said, and the dominance and control right. mentality. And all of those lands, like Lemuria, went underwater. Some people say Hawaii is part of that connection. From Lemuria all the way over to Asia was where Lemuria was located, I believe. And then I talked to you in an email, and I said, what do you know about Mount Shasta? Because there was a program that was on and was dealing with, you know, if it's just regular folks talking about stuff, well, I heard this, I saw that, but it was Native American people around Mount Shasta. And I think there's a great truth in a lot of what the natives you know, have passed down for generations. And they were talking about you don't go up above this certain area on Mount Shasta because there were Lemurians and other beings, ancient beings that were living there, and they didn't mind so much that you were there. It's just that you weren't of their vibration, and if you didn't go there with, you know, a pure heart, you wouldn't be welcome there. And so this one guy, he went against the elders. He was a young guy, native guy. He went up there with his girlfriend camping, and he came out of his tent, and he saw these beings staring at him. They were very tall, and they didn't say anything to him, and it scared the heck out of him, and he got out of there. And it's just, I believe that there could be some truth in that, that the Lemurians maybe relocated there. And I also believe there are stories that they, I believe, relocated to the inner earth. And that could go on and on and on, so I won't go down that. But it's fascinating that you might have been around here on the planet, which could have been tens of thousands of years ago, really. And so you, well, go ahead.
Even though I was in a stone building or a rock building, my consciousness was as clear as now. And it was like we weren't into physically evolving. We were into spiritually or psychologically evolving.
Yes.
Or we already were evolved.
We already were. It's like we had something and then we lost it. Do you ever feel that way, Byron?
Yes. I feel that we got an ego and it ruined everything for us. And I think it was put into us.
Somebody else did it. And I've kind of come from the the mindset that we were fully functional beings and totally knew what we were doing at one time. And then, and it's all through agreements. It's not like, oh, somebody stepped in and took it away from you. You'd have to agree to it because that's the way the universe works. So we agreed to experience duality, separation from oneness. And we allowed others to take control, and they've taken control of a lot of things, and we've forgotten how we're supposed to be as beings. And so they, some people say that they've messed with our DNA. We're supposed to have 12 strands, and we only have two, most physical bodies, and we only use a certain percentage of our brain. And so in a way, what you're saying about ego is similar to what I say about how they've manipulated us to, so we can't fully function the way that we're intended. And your stuff with ego, I totally agree, because if you want to return to what I would call a higher level yourself, you really have to remove ego, because it's the part of you that wants to keep hanging on or controlling everything, doesn't it?
Right. Yes, that's exactly right. That's where it comes from.
And so it's like, well, this person didn't do this for me, and that's not right. It's like, let it go. Or, you know, I didn't get a new car for my company, let it go. Or this is not good because of this. And it's like, you know, when you let go of all of that, you realize you don't need it. And also, I think in the highest, if we could reach our highest state, Byron, we could create all that stuff that that we wanted. But we wouldn't do it because we don't have ego. We would create what we need to be here. So you're from another dimension, these beings. Did you have contact with them more than once, or was that the only time?
I've had psychic contact with them. That is the only time I've seen them that I know of, because they could come here and wipe out my memory. And they've saved my life a few times.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in just a moment, but why do you think that you went through all this trouble to be here now in a physical body?
One reason was to come here and raise my consciousness by not from higher than what, to come here as a human, to develop as a human, but then to raise my consciousness to much higher than the general population or those that aren't interested in it, 36%. And, because each time a person raises their consciousness, they raise the consciousness of the entire planet.
Yes.
And so that was part of it. And then another part was to write my books and to make my music. and to help people, especially through the book Chosen, to help people that are being abducted also are visited, and to help them to be more comfortable with the situation.
Do you believe, because this is what I've kind of fallen into, and I don't, you know, I'm open for everything, and I won't lock on it completely, because then it becomes part of your belief system. But kind of what I'm seeing from so many people, psychics and channelers, and my own feelings, is that the Earth is going through a transition. And some say we're moving into the fifth dimension from the third. And there are many now, and we have star seeds, star children, whatever you want to call them, from dimensions that are assisting us, angelic forces. All these beings are now here because this is the time that was chosen. It's not like, oh, we've been awakened. God's finally said, okay, I'm tired of you people down there. It's more of that we made the decision that this would be the time. As the Mayans pointed to the end of their calendar, it really wasn't the end. It was the beginning of the new time. No longer would we be a time of enslavement. It would be the age of enlightenment. And so this is the beginning stages of that, and many of us have signed up to help move us forward so we no longer continue to do what we've always done, which was wars and violence and lack and materialism and ego and all of the things that keep us from what we are. Do you see yourself as being part of a mission like that? Because I sure do.
Yes, definitely.
And I feel like... go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
What were you going to say?
I've forgotten.
Sorry.
But yes, I think that we're here for that purpose. And I think what we're seeing right now is the death throes. You know, before something dies, a lot of times it will get really strong, mm-hmm. and then it'll just drop.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, materialism and all that stuff is trying to get really strong, but it's not going to happen.
You know, and people, there would have been a time in my life, I don't know about you, Byron, I would have been afraid to lose that. But now I see there is so much more. And like you, I had an experience with both my parents after they passed away. And you talked about that wave of love. And when I received that in 1996 and then again in 2011, it makes it really clear as to what is going on. And there's so much more. And if you were in a state of pure joy, was that what you felt?
Yes. Yes, when I was with them, it was amazing.
And so if you're in a state of... Go ahead. I'm sorry again. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I would have stayed.
Right.
I really would have stayed if they hadn't kicked me out.
So my point on it is that when you experience that pure joy, you realize everything here pales in comparison because it's not surrounded with that joy and light, which we should have. We really should in these physical bodies, but it's kind of being blocked. And so what the goal is now is to return us to that, I really believe, in human physical form. We can have physical bodies. We'll be more towards light bodies, I believe, and we will experience all that bliss, which is what many of us want to do. And when enough of us agree to that, and like you say, you came here to raise your vibration, and in doing so, it's like adding one more piece to the puzzle. And when we don't have to finish the whole puzzle, Byron, do we? Just get enough of the pieces so we can kind of go, oh, that's what it looks like. What do you think the amount of people is a percentage? I've heard that, you know, they talk about a collective. When it reaches a certain level, it's a tipping point, and then consciousness will come here in waves, and everybody will be able to receive it. Do you feel that there is a tipping point?
I really don't know. I hope so. Well, you know, it only seems logical that there is, because if like suddenly 50% of the population was enlightened, that would have a profound effect on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
For the better. Even those people who were totally sunk into materialism most likely would benefit.
Right. Absolutely.
So I'd say maybe 50%.
Yeah, I don't know what the number is. I've heard it before, but who's to say what it is? And I just think it's like when enough people, you know, there's even companies now that have been created. I interviewed a man a few years ago, and he found that when you get together with others and you create a group consciousness, you find answers for disease and other things. And he started doing this because his sister was sick, and he wanted to find a way to help heal her. And he came to research and understand that through group consciousness, and he didn't quite understand why, that we could find answers. And I think it's the collective mind connecting as one. And that way we have greater power together.
You know, rats, when a rat suddenly learns to do a maze that scientists have tried to get rats all over the world to do, when one rat breaks that maze, suddenly all the rats quickly break the maze as well.
That's a good point.
So, yes, their group, you know, every animal has group consciousness.
Yeah. And we as people, I think so as well. I look at, like, the sporting world, which I watch a little bit of sports, and I see how athletes today, you know, there was a time when they couldn't do certain things. And it seems like once, a good example, a friend of mine told me that the 4-minute mile, I think it was the 4-minute mile, nobody believed you could do that. And when one guy did it, I think it was Glenn Cunningham, was the first person to do the 4-minute mile. Then after that, everybody could do it. But before that, nobody.
Yeah.
And so everybody started believing.
And I don't think it's because it just made him feel confident. I think it was actually an effect spread through the whole group of people.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we see. So when somebody does something and we go, wow, that's remarkable. Then you read about, here's a good example. I'm guessing you don't probably watch a lot of football if you're an alien abductee.
Yeah.
Do aliens from other dimensions watch football?
I don't. I figured out a while back if football lasted 20 minutes and they started playing and didn't stop until the 20 minutes was up, I would probably enjoy that. That's the only part is those extended plays at the very end that I find interesting. The rest of it, they start and stop just way too much for me.
Well, we can look at the national championship as a good example of we had two freshman quarterbacks. Now, initially, Alabama didn't start a freshman quarterback, but they weren't doing well, so they brought in a true freshman. And he came back, and they were down 17-0. And they came back and won the game. Which I didn't even really watch the game, but being on the radio, I've got to keep track of these things. Now, there was a time that you would never let a true freshman even hold the football, let alone get on the field. But this is how we're seeing those being born younger and younger having greater and greater abilities. And at the same time, if you look at the NFL, you see a 40-year-old Tom Brady who is playing like he's 20. And Drew Brees the other day was playing incredibly well, and he's close to that age. Now, there was a time when you reached 38, 37, you were washed up in the NFL, even the greatest ones that ever played the game. So what we're seeing is people lasting longer, I believe, and also at younger ages doing remarkable things. And this is part of us evolving to become what we're meant to be, which I think is unlimited. Let's talk a little bit, unless there's more you want to discuss on that, about some of the things that happened to you. You came to realize that these beings, these multidimensional beings, were keeping you alive?
Yes.
Because that's...
They've saved my life at least 9 times.
And you were telling me about this, and I thought it was just truly an amazing story. You know, I believe... When we come to these physical bodies, we choose our parents, and we choose the body we want to inhabit, and it's done so we can gain the greatest advancement. Well, sometimes we come here to coast, so we might pick a bunch of slacker family. You know, everybody's got a different reason for coming here. But a lot of times it's to learn and try to raise our level of consciousness, the majority of times probably. I don't know for sure. But... You inhabited a body that was really meant for someone else. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, it was someone from my from where I'm from my dimension was going to be born in this body. and he did not want to be here very long. He wanted to be here a year or two. And so it was planned that the body would have cancer and he would die. Well, then they came up and they wanted me to take this body, and I agreed on it, but they had to, first off, they were going to put me in during the operation, but he didn't want to even wait that long, so I was actually put into the womb.
So you would have been
still in the womb.
I'm sorry, you would have been a walk-in at that point. That's what they call walk-ins, right?
Yes, I would have been a walk-in.
But instead you weren't. You were born, you were there right kind of at the beginning.
Yes, I was born and I forgot all my, all the reasons I came here pretty much. You know, I have memories from when I was pre-verbal, when I was an infant, just learning to walk. I can remember standing up and holding on to things to move. And one day in bed, my father had me, I was at the head of the bed and he was laying there and I was standing on his forehead and I slipped and gave him a black eye. I've always enjoyed that thought. But I could think in words, even though I couldn't talk.
Isn't that something? What does that tell you?
Although everything was so amazing to me. The sunlight was amazing. Everything was amazing.
Yeah. That's kind of neat to hear that. You should write a baby book like that. What am I telling? I'm not telling you what to do, but I'm just saying the observations of a baby, you know? I could see that being a book. So you were meant to have cancer in 1952. This body was meant because the original inhabitor was going to leave. And some people will say, wait a second, cancer is a disease. And it's like, it's also part of a greater plan. And sometimes disease is brought on by things around us, I think. Sometimes it's brought on by our thoughts and emotions. But also it's designed to happen at a certain time because it's part of a pre-planned destiny for several reasons, and it could be different for everybody. So what happened with, you had this rare disease, a sarcoma, which generally people, especially back in 1952, they didn't survive that, did they?
No. It's, I was sick for a year and they kept taking me to this doctor in Marble Falls and he couldn't figure out anything that would work. I got where I wasn't standing up. I got where I didn't want to eat. I got where I would cry some, but I was even too tired to cry. And so I was lethargic quite a lot. This kept bothering him. He sent us to a doctor in Austin, a urologist. And we went to Austin. We went to the meeting, and he did a bunch of tests, x-rays and stuff. And Mom and Dad were waiting downstairs in the hospital, and Dad said that when he walked out of the elevator with me in his arms, he was as white as his doctor's coat. And he told my parents that I had sarcoma, that it was fatal, that they would do all they could, which of course was surgery. That was it. Mm-hmm. They would do what they could, but he encouraged my parents to have another child, and they had only planned on having one, but to have another one so it would lessen the blow when I died, because he expected me to die, if not soon, within a couple of years.
How old were you then?
Sarcoma Wills.
How old were you?
I was 2.5.
Okay.
So I was 1.5 when it all started, or when it got bad. I probably had it from birth, but it is most likely to spread systemically throughout your entire body quickly. And mine somehow grew out into my bladder instead of back into my body, which is what it normally would have done. So it was just local. And I believe that was part of an intervention by them to keep me alive so I could make it to the operation.
And so how did you beat this cancer?
They cut it out.
They cut it out?
Did
they cut out other parts of you as well?
Yes. They took out one-third of my bladder, the bottom one-third, and everything that was attached to it, the Cowper's gland, the prostate gland, all of those inside, gone.
And how long did it take you to recover?
Now, there is a big gap in my memory around that time. I remember being in a hospital room in a bed that was up against a wall, and the wall was tile two-thirds of the way up, the six-inch, five-inch tile, you know, square, just plain tile, and it was a beige color or a white color. I'm not positive about the color. And I was in a hospital bed, and there was this huge aluminum cart that went, it was about 5 feet tall, that was just filled with trays of food. And so they were apparently coming in to feed me at that point. That's one memory I have. And I had described that room to my parents, and they tell me that that's exactly, it was exact. I was correct.
Hmm.
So a lot of the stuff that happened, I haven't been able to remember, but I'm working on my memory, and I had a little breakthrough the other day, which will seem insignificant, but for some reason, my will was working really good, and I started trying to force my brain to give me a memory from my distant from my childhood. And suddenly, this picture that looked just like a movie faded in from black to a picture of my potty chair when I was potty trained. And it was just there, a little wooden chair with the little pot in it that was enameled iron or steel with a red rim. And then there was this packet, and I'm going to call it a packet. There was this thing, this packet of really negative feelings with it. And I actually turned it off and ran from it. I should have opened up that packet and seen what all was in there. It obviously came from the experience of being potty trained.
Hmm.
And so I don't know what it was, but there was negativity there. And then it just all disappeared, and that was it. But I started remembering things around that time period that I had forgotten a long, long time ago. So I'm making inroads into my memory, but it's slow.
You don't know how you healed. I mean, it's, obviously they cut it out of you, and then they're going to say it's a miracle because it shouldn't stop growing. But you don't recall what healed it to you.
No. They cut it out. It was gone. So my body just had to heal like it would from any trauma, you know, traumatic, physical.
And that was all they could back in the early 50s. They didn't have the chemo and radiation. So
no.
They just keep cutting until they couldn't do it anymore. And I know they probably, were you in any pain? Do you remember that at all with dealing with that?
I don't remember that.
Okay. So this is an experience that really, you know, some people could say, well, you were just a lucky man, but you really believe that something, that these beings stepped in and allowed you to live. And then your first contact with the gray beings, when did that take place?
1955.
And how old would you have been then?
5 years old. I was born in 1950, and this was right after we had moved to Segalville, Texas.
And what happened?
I was in my bed. Mama had put me to bed. She put me to bed every night, tucked me in, even though I would kick the covers off the minute she left because I'd be too hot. And she would come in, tuck me in, and we would have a discussion as to whether to leave the hall light on, and it would always be yes, leave the hall light on, from my point of view. So that night, she came into the bedroom with me, put me in bed, tucked me in, kissed me goodnight, and walked out and left the light on in the hallway. And then I turned, so I'm facing the door because I watched her leave. The door was to my right. I turned to my left, and there are three little guys standing at the foot of my bed. They're on the side, but they're down near the headboard. and I was very shocked, and I immediately yelled for Mama to come in here, because how did these little guys get in my room? That's what I was wondering, where they were from. What were they? And she comes in, and they're not there. They're gone. So I told her what happened, and as far as my recollection goes, she didn't really say much. She didn't say it was a dream. She didn't say it was my imagination. She just said, well, it's time for you to go to sleep. And she tucked me in and left the room. The next night, the very same thing happened, except that I did get one of the grays, his face shifted a little bit. And for a moment, it even looked like he was a gigantic rag doll made in the shape of a gray. And that was then beginning to exert an influence over my perceptions. But anyway, I yelled for Mama. She came in. We went through the whole thing. The third night, the same thing. She comes into the room. They're gone. She sits down. She said, son, don't call me in here anymore. When I come in here, they're not going to be here. You're just going to have to learn to deal with them yourself.
Wow.
And that's when she said, don't call me in here anymore.
Oh, my goodness.
So I would go, thanks, Mom.
And you're 5 years old.
She leaves. Yeah. She leaves, and there they are. Yeah. Only this time they don't disappear. Well, they'd already disappeared. They don't disappear the second time. And I noticed that over to my left, in the shadows of the corner of the room, is this being that's about 7 feet tall, and he looks like, to me, he looks like Captain Hook. And he starts dancing around the room, or I call it dancing. They move in such a strange way because they're mantises under a robe. Well, I was having some, they were controlling my perceptions and making me see something that I liked. I liked Captain Hook. I liked
Japan. Would you say that they're trying to make friends with you, or at least put you at ease a little bit?
Yes. Yes. And definitely. And later they just did it directly. But anyway, my bed starts rotating and I can't move. I felt like I was tied to the bed. I did manage to move my eyes enough to see that my hand was not tied. The little guys were like they were frozen to the side of the bed, and they were moving with it. And the bedroom had become almost four times as big as it was. And we're rotating in the middle of it. And then I start feeling panic. Just the beginning of panic, and everything's gone. I'm back in my room. It's the correct size. I can move. There's nothing there. And I'm going, what, was this a dream or something? And I said, no, how would a dream happen 3 nights in a row? And then that was it. And I did not discuss it with my parents.
When you talk about, because there's certain things that I've recognized, and I've heard enough of alien abductions or had my own encounter in 1992. First of all, I asked about them befriending you, because you read that a lot, that to children, they appear not that they're, I don't think they're trying to threaten or scare people, but they're more careful with children, how they appear to them, because they don't want to frighten them. It seems like when you become an adult, they stop worrying about that. But,
yeah.
And also you talked about being pinned down. They physically didn't have you pinned down, did they?
No.
And
they psychically had me pinned down.
That's the same way I felt when I had that interaction with a gray, which I just did a couple of shows ago. I talked about briefly, but in 1992, I had asked to see a gray, and I kept asking it as I was falling asleep. Huh, there are people that don't want to see that, but I did. And I realized that if you repeat something as you go to sleep, it kind of sinks into subconscious, or somehow I did the same thing in communicating with my father. So I wake up, it's, I don't know, after midnight, and a little gray is on the left side of the bed, and he's maybe a foot or two away from it. And he's looking at me, and I'm, you know, first I sit up in bed. I go, huh, I'm awake. And I look around, and then I see, and it's dark, but yet I can see him clear as a day. And he's standing there, and he's 4 feet tall with the big eyes and everything like that. And he starts moving closer, not even like he's walking. It's like he's gliding. And he gets closer, right to the foot of my bed. And then I realize I can't move, just like you. And the only thing I could move was my eyes. And I was starting to panic, thinking, you know, I'm having trouble breathing a little bit. And my arms are just locked. And this thought hits me. And it says, if you have no intention of hurting him, he will let you go. And I said, and my thought back was, I don't. I just wanted to see if he existed. And when I thought that, all of a sudden, I could start moving my arms a little bit and my chest and my head. And I watched this gray, and he glided over to the right side of my bed, right at the foot of it. And I was on the right side of the bed. You know, it was a single bed, but I was sleeping more on the right side of it. And now I thought, is he going to get any closer? I sure hope he doesn't. And that was it. And I woke up the next day at maybe 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning. And for the longest time, I thought it was a dream. And then I came to realize, because I've done this my whole life, I'm very good at remembering dreams. You don't remember them unless you wake up right after them. Your chances are they're not going to be vivid, and this was so vivid and clear. You're not going to remember it unless you wake up right after it. And so I finally believed, and then some psychic friends of mine said, yeah, you did really have a visitation from one of these beings. And like you, it's good to get confirmation from people that you can trust that prove. So again, I support what you say about your experience, at least from my own knowledge. So then there was this strange incident, and there's so many of these, Byron, we probably can't go into all of them, but this is really cool story. In 1961, you're 10, 11 years old, you're at school, and everybody saw a UFO?
Yes. That was the very first one. Well, not everybody. Everybody in the class. We were in music class, and our teacher, and I think his name was Mr. Cathy, he was sick that day, and we had this young woman who was substituting. She was in her 20s, and she said, it's such a beautiful day, because it was when the weather was beginning to not be really bad cold.
Hello?
Well, there were leaves on the tree. I remember that. So anyway, it was a beautiful day, and it had been cold. She took us outside. She wanted to do calisthenics, and we were just not all really enthused about that, but we did what the teacher told us to do. So we get out there, and we're on a gravel area next to the building where cars would drive through, and she lines us up in about 4 or 5 rows of 5 or 6 people each, and has us reach out our arms and touch the ends of our fingers, and then move just a little bit more separately from each other. Then she had us do side straddle hops. And she was really, really pretty, too. I just remember that, though I can't see her in my mind anymore.
That's why you're happy to do that.
Yes. So she has us doing side straddle hops, and then all of a sudden, and I think everybody saw it the same time I did, we were in front of a big oak tree, and we were out in the sun, and she was under the shade, which we thought that wasn't fair.
No.
It was a little bit warmer than we liked.
Yeah.
But anyway, she was the power person. So there above the tree is the nose to I used to put together models, and I knew these two models very well. It looked like the George Washington nuclear submarine flipped upside down, with the battle deck of the battleship Missouri affixed to it, and no conning tower, but all of the things that would have been guns were rims. And it was moving very, very slowly over the top of that tree, and it was huge. And we were all just standing there. I had my mouth open. I'm sure everybody else did. We're just transfixed looking at it. And then all of a sudden, it disappears. It's just gone. And she says, that was nothing. Now, nobody had said anything, and she said, that was nothing. She's under the tree where she probably couldn't even see it, but she knew it was there.
She didn't want to alarm people.
Either that or she was one of them.
No, that's what I was just going to ask you next, Byron. What if she, because this was a substitute teacher, did you ever talk about that with your classmates or anybody years later or at any time?
No, at that time I didn't talk to anybody about it, and nobody talked to me about it.
Wow.
But last year I posted a picture, but I made a model of the thing out of a submarine and a battleship. I made the model, and then I photographed it as if it were a painting in real life with a Sigaville water tower, even though that's not where it happened. So I talked about it, and nothing happened. Then again, I posted it, and this one woman that I had started talking to, she said, yeah, I know about it. Huh. I was not there because I had pneumonia. That's the only time I've had pneumonia, so everything right around that time period stuck in my mind. And when I came back to school after a week, she was gone during the week that it happened. After she came back, several people told her about the incident, several other students.
Hmm. So
there was my verification.
Nobody talked with you, but they talked with her about it. Isn't that unusual? Did you get along with the other kids? Were you friends with the other kids?
I got along with everybody, but I was rather quiet.
So you felt like you said earlier, and this is what a lot of alien people that are maybe feel like they're from other planets, star children, or whatever you want to call them, star seeds. And I felt like this too as a child. They don't feel like they fit in. And sometimes, go ahead. What were you going to say, Byron?
I couldn't understand a lot of the things they did and a lot of the ways they acted. I just couldn't understand it.
Mm-hmm. See, when I was younger, I went along with that. And then there was some point that a light switch flipped on me. And it's like, and that was probably later for me, even into adulthood, because I was one of the drones that went along and did all those things. And then somewhere along the way, my enlightenment switch was flipped, and I thought, why are we doing this? And look at all this. And that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But even as going to school, I still felt like I didn't fit in and came from a different, I don't know, I wasn't part of what everybody else was. And I'm glad that I grew up that way, because it was more natural for me. I mean, you say you live out in the country. We grew up out in the country, and I live out in the country now. And it was a different way of, you know, seeing things, living out in the country, because kids in town, I know if I'd have lived in town, I probably got in trouble, hung with other kids. And growing up where I did, it was just so much more rewarding to be out in nature. And I love it to this day, connection with the animals. So you had that experience with the UFO, and you were able to corroborate that a little bit. That's kind of cool. And then you have this, I know it's kind of a long story, but in 1963 you got hit by a car while you were on a bicycle, and you should have died, right?
Yes. I was riding home from school because they let us, we were able to go anywhere we wanted to when we were kids, pretty much, because there wasn't anything bad happening at that particular point in time. It started about 3 years later. But I see this big, huge, brown, two-tone Dodge coming, or Plymouth, one of the two, coming straight at me, and I don't have time to react. I know I'm going to be hit. Then I'm laying on the ground, rolling head over heels. And as my head comes up, the car fender and the tire and the light are about 2 feet from me, if even that much. And then I go over again, and then I come back, and there it is coming towards me, and again, and there it is coming towards me. And then again, it's coming towards me, but this time my body straightens out, flies. Now, I could not move during the whole thing, which is probably good. I would have probably gotten myself killed. So my body straightens up, and I fly between the top two wires of a barbed wire fence, and one of the barbs dips in to my arm, my left arm, and left a one-inch scar. That was the only, and I sprained my ankle. Anyway, I fly through the fence, which was a really weird feeling to be laying on your back in the air, flying between these wires and seeing the sky and everything.
What are the odds of being able to get right through? Because those fence, how wide is it between the barbs, you know? Is it a foot and a half, if that, or it's not that wide, is it?
It's less. It's about a foot.
Wow.
In 2009 or 2008, a man in Nacogdoches that was a good friend of the person that taught me how to play bass guitar, was in a car wreck. He didn't have his seatbelt on, and the car was demolished, but he was thrown out of the car, and at that point, he was fine. But when he hit the barbed wire fence, it looked like he'd been through a cheese grater, and it was actually the fence that killed him.
Wow. So, you know, the odds of somebody flying at just the right, you know, I mean, that's just sounds impossible. And then furthermore, what picked you up and threw you? You were rolling underneath the car after the bike hit you, and you kept rolling at the right speed so the car's tires wouldn't crush you. And then somehow you got lifted up and pushed while lying on your back through,
yes,
between the barbed wire, which is a foot wide, and then you flew into what?
Then I landed on this really thick grass, and which burned a week later. And the doctor told me in a follow-up visit, he told me if that grass had burned before my accident, I'd have been dead from hitting the ground. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but it made sense.
Well, it softened your landing, that's for sure. And
so there's a policeman and all these people around me, and the policeman won't let me move. He said he's called an ambulance. And I'm going, well, I'm fine. And he said, well, we had to call an ambulance. And I said, well, I'd really like to get up. And he said, no. And I said, I can't find my glasses. Well, he found them there on the ground and gave them to me, and I put them on. Then the ambulance got there, and we went to my house, which happened to be on the way. I was not far from my house anyway. They picked up my mother. Dad was at work, and they took me to the hospital. And when I was getting up, I found out I had a sprained ankle. So I had the gash in my arm, 1 inch, and not even an inch deep, 1 inch long, and a sprained ankle.
And what did your bike look like
that was it.
After that incident? What did that look like?
It was so funny. Yes. When I was in the hospital, when we were getting ready to go home, Dad says, you got a new bike. It was the husband of my teacher that hit me, by the way.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I made an A. Anyway, I said, I don't want a new bike. I love my bike. He said, well, you're getting a new one. And I said, well, then I can have two. And he said, he mumbled something. So we got to the house, and once again, I go on. I love the bike. It's there on the porch. It was a red and white American Flyer with a light, with streamers, with the pump bar in the back for somebody to ride on, with a basket, everything. I mean, it was a Cadillac bicycle. And I said, well, that's really good. Where's my other bike? He said, come with me. He takes me around to the side of the house under the carport, and there's my bike leaning against the wall. And we did lay it down because it was shaped, if you were looking at it from above, it was shaped like a crescent moon. And the car had hit right where I was sitting directly. I thought maybe it had hit a wheel, you know, the handlebars, and that's what had thrown me off the bike. No, it hit me right there. It bent the bike where it was about a foot and a half off of the ground in the middle when it was laying on its side.
So it was pretty well mangled.
Yes. And my father had said, on the way home, he had said that it was a miracle that I was still alive. And I'm going, oh, yeah, sure. fly. I wasn't even touched. Well, I found out I should have been touched, but apparently when that car hit the bicycle, I had been shifted out of there.
I still don't understand how you were rolling on the ground and then you flew backwards lying on your back through barbed wire. How does that happen?
They did it.
That's
they
what I'm
did
saying.
It all.
There's no way. You had intervention. And some people would say, well, angels intervened on your behalf. And I believe angels will when it's not your time that they will. But there also are other beings, many other beings, that are interacting with us that we're not aware of. And in your case, you believe these were your family, if you want to call them that, from the place you come from. These multidimensional beings have been watching out for you your whole life, right?
Yes. They apparently shifted me out of this dimension the instant the car hit, and then they put me back at another point. Now, this has happened so many times. I'm sure they know ahead of time when it's going to happen.
So yeah.
It's because I thought, how are they getting a spaceship from halfway across the world over to where I am to save my life? That just doesn't make any sense. I mean, I know they move real fast,
right.
But if these are accidents but the last one that happened, well, there have been two different occasions when I knew they know my future, they know my past, and they know my present. And on the 5th of November this year, the 5th of November when they saved my life, they was in a car wreck. I'll just go ahead and tell the story.
Sure.
I'm going home from dinner, and I'm passing this road that goes off at an angle. It's called Old North Church Road, and it cuts off at an angle, and it joins Highway 59, which was where I was going, just about 3 miles from where I was going to get on. And something told me, it said, why don't you take that road? And I'm going, I'm not going to take that road. And I think I'm talking to myself. I'm going, I don't even want to take that road. I decided a year ago it's too rough, it's too slow, and I want to get home fast. So I kept going, turned on to 59, and the speed limit is 75 miles an hour. I was behind this truck, and I was getting ready to pass him, but he passed the car that was next to him, and I just let him pass. I wasn't going to try and fight a truck. And he pulled back over, and then I pull up to pass him because they're still going about 70. I get next to that truck, and I'm halfway to passing him, you know, and he starts pulling into my lane. So I'm going, I won't even say what I said. I shifted into the turn lane, and then I realize he's coming into the turn lane. And at that point, we were topping a hill, and I'm going, he knows I'm here. What the heck is he doing? And then suddenly I see something ahead of me, and I'm going, what is that? I wasted a good 3 seconds, maybe four, trying to figure out what was in front of me. At that point, I go, oh, crap, it's a truck. It was the trailer part of a 18-wheeler. It was blocking three of the lanes, and then part of its load was blocking the very first lane, which was on the right, and I couldn't even see because of the truck next to me. I slam on my brakes. I'm going, oh, I get halfway down, and he's coming into the turn lane, and I go, man, if I slow down, he's going to hit me with the back of his truck. So at that point, I'm going 75 miles an hour, and I slam the gas all the way to the floor. And the car jumped forward a bit, up to about 77 miles an hour. And we crest the hill, and I see the truck, and I just slam on the brakes. And I raise up out of the seat. I'm 45 feet away from a semi-truck going 77 miles an hour. And he then, and it's funny, my perception of time was like it was very, a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
When actually this all happened almost instantaneously.
It's like slow motion, right?
Yes. I'm right almost even with his back. I'm right behind his cab, but behind the back wheels, which are under the trailer. He smashes in to the trailer, and his fender explodes and shoots across in front of me. I'm about 20 feet, let's just say 25 feet. I'm 25 feet from the thing, and I look down, and I'm going, crap, I'm still going 60 miles an hour. And that's pretty much when I started raising up and just riding the brake pedal. But, of course, the anti-lock brakes kept going on and off, on and off, on and off. And he smashes into the truck, and then I go, are you guys actually going to let me die this time? And the car immediately slows down to zero. And I'm 5 feet from the truck.
And I think the law of physics wouldn't allow you to stop like that. There's no way.
It takes 350 feet to stop a modern truck going 75 miles an hour.
Okay. Well, you just answered that. So how did this happen?
They had to do it. And this is another thing that I hadn't even thought about. I wear a top hat because I love my top hat, and I always ride with it on the seat next to me. Well, if I have to stop real fast to go through a stoplight, I mean, keep from going through a stoplight, the hat falls onto the floor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting there, and that hat was right beside me. It did not. And my body did not move forward. Nothing in the car shifted. There was no inertial force reaction inside the car.
Wow, that's really cool. That is, and you know, go ahead.
I sat there for about a minute and gathered my thoughts because I was a little bit scrambled. And I called 911, and they told me they knew about the accident. I'm going, what? I realized there had been an accident probably on the other side. Oh, they were talking about the truck itself,
right?
Not us.
Right.
So anyway, I hung up. I turned. I had to back up and turn to the left because cars were beginning to go around that end of the stalled truck. And I left and went home. I talked to the highway patrol the next day, and they said since I was involved in the accident, they really didn't need to talk to me.
Yeah, it's funny because when you're talking about this part about slow motion, and then, you know, I've never been in a serious accident, but when I was 18 years old, I drove like a maniac and way too fast for conditions. And I remember I lived in Wausau, Wisconsin. I went to broadcasting school, and during the day, I would work at a grocery store, and at night, I'd go to class for 5 hours. And I'm driving on some icy roads. It was snowing, and I came over the top of this hill. It's two lanes on one side and two lanes on the opposite side, going the opposite way. And so I'm in the left-hand lane, and down at the bottom of a stoplight, maybe 70 yards, I think it was about 70 yards away from me, was the station wagon parked. And I started tapping my brakes, and I thought, okay, I'm going 45 or whatever. And I could not stop. I probably had bad tires on my car, too. And so this is in 1979. And I'm tapping my brakes, and I realize I'm going to lose control, and I'm not going to stop in time. So then my next thought is to go into the right-hand lane. And I look over, and there's a grader, you know, going a little slower, but he's parallel with me, a grader. So now I've got 60 yards to decide what I'm going to do. And something comes over me. I don't know what it was. It wasn't me. And it says, speed up, get past the grader, hit the brakes, cut the wheel. Right when you get to the wagon, you'll shoot over into the right-hand lane. I'd never done this before. I wasn't an experienced driver. And I did that. And I remember everything was like in slow motion. And when I got to the getting past the grader and then finally hitting my brakes, I'm watching me, the front of my car, like in slow motion, and it's swerving over. And the front end is turning real hard. And it just misses that wagon by like an inch. And then I'm watching my back end, and I'm thinking, that's going to hit it. And I turn it to correct it, and that misses by about a foot. And I shoot over into this right-hand lane, and I shoot out about a foot sticking out at the intersection, not far enough for the cars going through the intersection to hit me. Now, how did I stop, and how did I make that turn? It was just, it was remarkable. And I felt that angels, you know, at the time you think nothing. I was 18, you know. Oh, well, as long as I'm not late for work. And then, you know, later you realize something stepped in. And it was also when I was going to that broadcasting school, I would come home on the weekend, which was about 150 miles away. And I would drive fast. I was driving 95 on a two-lane road. You know, that's not a good idea. It's 60 miles an hour, whatever it was back then.
Right.
And there were a lot of deer up here in Wisconsin and upper Michigan where I live. And I'm driving along. Now, this, to me, I don't even know if this really happened because it seems like it's just too strange. And this, I look over, and in the woods, there's a deer. And he's up ahead of me. And I'm thinking, okay, I can slow down. And I see him running towards the highway. I mean, he's like 60 yards off the highway, but I can tell he's going to come right at me. And do I slow down, but I might hit him head on? Or do I speed up? And something tells me to speed up. I'm already going 95, so I think I must have been 105. Anyway, I speed up, and this deer, I see it like playing out in slow motion. He's running. I'm thinking, okay, he won't hit the front of me, but he's going to hit the side of me. He's going to hit my driver's side. No, he's not going to hit that. The last thing I remember, Byron, is I looked out my back window, and there was his face up against it. His face, the face of the deer, was right up against my back window. And I'm thinking there's going to be a thud, and nothing. It's like he disappeared.
Wow.
And I know it probably wouldn't have killed me, but I was going at a high rate of speed, so who knows what would have happened. But again, I felt like, you know, as I look back at it later, I was protected. And do you think it's angelic, or do you think, you kind of think that maybe I've been taken as well, or I've had connections to, you know, beings, aliens, whatever? Some of the things I've had, you feel that maybe there have been alien encounters, right?
Oh, yes, everything. Everything you've told me, everything. It was about the second email that you sent me that I go, oh, this guy's an abductee or a contactee. And in fact, I think it was a letter or two later that I mentioned it to you, that you sounded like one. And the things you've just described, these are the things they can do.
Yeah, but don't you think that angels, I mean, do you believe in angels? Do you believe that they interact with us too?
I do know this. At one time, the people from my people were considered angels.
Okay.
And they may still be considered angels.
Okay.
They can come here and they can stay non-physical, but they can come here and immediately manifest as material.
So,
although they can leave it just as quickly.
So you really don't kind of think that maybe there are angels, but there are these beings that...
Well...
And that's fine. I mean, I'm open to all possibilities because, you know...
There are groups of aliens called the Angelics.
Okay. And so...
And it is believed that they were what people think of as angels. But they have the same qualities. Now, you have the, you know, that so... I get caught in thinking of the term angel from the Christian point of view, even though it exists separately. And that's one problem I have to overcome in myself because they're spiritual. They're angels.
Right.
So I just use different terms.
Yeah, I totally get that. And I can also see that, you know, we label a lot of things as alien, but really when you think about it, everything's alien. That is not something that we're, you know, anything that's different from us, we considered alien, right? So,
yeah.
Some people view angels as being alien beings. I guess I just view them as these beings. My understanding of what an angel, an archangel, all those are, they're beings that have signed up to help us. And they will interact with our life and help us and sometimes save us. And we can actually call on them to assist us. And it's not so much a religious thing as more of a spiritual guide that's there to support us. And I know that I've called on, like, Archangel Michael, and I'm sure that, you know, you could call on all different types of beings when I've had, when I'm traveling, because he seems to protect, and also when I've had spirits in my home knocking on the walls, I said, Michael, can you take a look at that? And then it's quiet, and they go away. So I believe that he is a way, in a way, as a protector, and I'm sure there are many, you know, each angel has a different, if you want to call him an angel. That's just my experience with those beings. And I could certainly see how you could say that they're really metaphysical beings more than anything.
They probably don't even care what we call them.
Yeah, probably. So, but you and I have had similar experiences in life. I certainly haven't had nearly the count, and I don't have the recall. And I guess maybe that'll come more because you've had so many different things happen. You even had missing time when you were a kid. The story in 1969, you had 6 hours miss. I've never experienced that. What happened with that?
That was at a summer camp. I graduated from high school and went to work at this summer camp. And it was on a weekend. All the counselors, or half the counselors, had to stay because a certain number of students stayed. Campers stayed. And we played music for them. We were up till midnight, and we'd go play guitars. I was big into singing and playing guitars, and so were two of the other people that were there. So we put everybody to bed, and I go lay down, and I'm in the top bunk, and our cabins were half wood and then half screen wire from the middle up to the roof, and then wood and metal for the roof. Well, I lay down, and I'm really tired, but I always had a hard time going to sleep. It's even worse then than now. So I lay there for a minute, and then I turn over to my right side away from the windows, and then I go and I turn back over, and the sun's coming up. I haven't been asleep, and it's only seemed like about 5 to 10 minutes, and the sun is coming up, which means 6 hours passed. Now, during a regression, I've had about two hypnotic regressions, and during that regression, I lay down to go to bed. Big light comes on outside, and it's a ship over this big open area pasture that's been mowed next to the cabins. And they get everybody up, and they have everybody is standing around sort of like a zombie, except for me. I can move, which to me says, of course, that they knew me, and I knew them. And I asked one of them psychically, not with words, if I was the reason that they were taking everybody. If they had come out there to get me and just decided to take everybody. And he said, no. They don't give long answers. He said, no. And he might have been lying. He might have been telling the truth. So anyway, and then I woke up. Then apparently I was put back into bed, and the way I experienced it was just turning over three times. So where the ship was, where we were abducted, where they looked at everybody, that 6 hours, that was blocked out of my mind for a long time.
And you had another, more than one experience with missing time, didn't you?
Yes. And one of my favorite ones, in 2009 when I found out I was an abductee and I wanted proof, first, two things happened pretty much in a row, just a few days apart. One morning I woke up, and there was, I woke up real early, staggered into the kitchen, grabbed a Red Bull out of the refrigerator, and then switched hands to pop the top. When I switched hands, there was blood on the Red Bull can. I'm going, what? There was about a spot of blood about as big as a postage stamp, maybe a little bigger. Well, I look at my right hand, and there's a hole in my palm about the size of a pencil lead, like I'd been jammed with a pencil lead, and it had bled. It was all over my palm. That's why I'd gotten on the can. So I washed my hand, and I sat down and drank some of the Red Bull, and then I went, how could I have done this? I didn't cut myself, and I surely would have felt this. I went and looked in the bedroom, and the night before, I had pulled everything out of my closet to reorganize it, and it was on both sides of my bed, so I had to crawl into the bed that night and in the morning from the foot of the bed. Well, I moved the sheets back because I figured there'd be a trail of blood going up. If I somehow got out of bed and cut myself, puncture myself, there was no blood, nowhere. So I go back and I sit down, and then I suddenly think, check the pillow. I look under the pillow, and on the pillow there was a spot of blood, not a spot, about enough to make a postage stamp, where my hand would be when I'm laying on my left side. And then on the blood was on the pillow where my right hand would be up. I mean, right side, not left side. My right hand would be up against the pillow, and it had bled against the pillow. And then I looked on the other side, and where I usually stuffed my hand under the pillow, but with it against the bed, palm down, there was another smaller amount of blood. So somehow I had gotten punctured while I was in bed. And I didn't think about that much for a while. But 6 hours later, when the wound was completely gone, completely, no pain, nothing, I could drag my finger over it, everything, it was gone, I knew something unique had happened.
Go ahead.
Wounds don't heal in 6 hours.
Why do you think that abductees are getting taken? I mean, you have your own experience, which maybe is different, because what you've told me about your multidimensional contact, very few people have talked about that. Most people talk about the grays coming in, and a lot of times it seems like they're doing some kind of experimentation or some kind of something to their bodies, or they're taking sperm or eggs, or they're procreating in some way with them. Does that seem like the typical gray abduction to you?
Part of it. I always had more energy, especially when I was young, more energy than my body could handle. So I was very nervous and jittery and uncomfortable and couldn't sleep and all this stuff. And I think that part of what they do is they come in and they start adjusting your DNA where it can actually handle all of this energy.
So for you, you felt they were helping you adapt to the physical human body, which you had only been in once before, and you really were coming from another dimensional place, a different vibrational, higher vibrational place. And they were doing things to make it easier. But, you know, some of the people I've talked to that have been taken also feel like they were being given information, that they were changing people's bodies for a reason, so that they would become more aware, maybe use more of their third eye to open up and be able to communicate with these beings. Some feel, more than one, feel that they were being prepared for when there might be a landing or an interaction, and that these would be some of these abductees would be kind of like ambassadors because they've had first-hand contact and they've kind of been trained. Do you feel anything like that, or have you talked to people that feel that way?
I feel that way, too. It's funny, about 4 years ago, right after I published my book, and once again, I forget the date, I was telling her about it, and I was telling her I was an abductee, and she goes, you know, I bet one of these days we're going to see you on TV, and you're going to be an ambassador to the aliens, for the aliens. So I thought that was sort of interesting.
You know, and I've heard people say that, like they're preparing them and getting them ready for something that's coming in. And do you think it's anything negative, or do you feel that this really is a positive thing that's happening?
I think it's positive. They've been coming here for thousands of years. If they were going to take over the planet, they would have already done it. If they were going to kill us all, they would have already done it. Everything, like, I don't think they're experimenting. To do an experiment, you're doing something that you don't know what the outcome is going to be.
Right.
So you experiment. Well, they are doing the same things over and over again on me for 62 years. That means they know what the outcome is going to be. Or they would be doing something different after 62 years. They go, this didn't work. So
right.
Obviously it did work, and it's a process. So they're doing procedures on us. And I think it is to change us to where we can handle these energies, for sure.
Mm-hmm. These changes that are coming, there is talk by many within the group that I don't belong to a specific group, but from what I understand of metaphysical teachings, they talk about our bodies are carbon based, and we're going to become lighter and less physical, and this great shift is going on with the Earth. It's going to become similar as well, and we're going to have more of light bodies. And so it's a process that we're moving towards, and maybe some are being assisted along the way to, and maybe, again, it's by choice. Well, why would some be helped and some wouldn't? Well, because maybe that's what we want. Others are going, well, how come I'm left in the dark? You can change your attitude and change your life
right.
And all of that. So there's always that choice. And then, well, how come these people are gifted and they get taken? It's like, do you feel that this was kind of an arrangement before you even came here?
Yes. Definitely. Have you ever seen the day the Earth stood still with Keanu Reeves?
Yeah.
When he started talking to that Asian in the restaurant, I was sending chills through my body. Mm. I'm going, my God, that is me.
Right. I think there's a lot of people, you know, there's certain signs, it seems like, people that don't fit in. They know they don't fit in. And, again, you could have strange things happen, or even just maybe seeing UFOs, and maybe you don't have memory. You know, I've seen two UFOs in my life. People around me have all seen UFOs. My son saw them.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like it's a lot of people around me that are connected to that. And what does it all mean? You know, I guess I never really saw myself as an abductee, but maybe as somebody that's been visited, a contactee. And, you know, I've been told that I've been on this planet many, many, many lifetimes. I have memory of previous times. So I think those of us that are kind of waking up to it, and there still is a lot I don't understand, but I really do feel like we're here at this time because this is the time of the great change. You know, I don't know if it's just the beginning or if it's going to happen rapidly. What do you see is going to happen in the future?
It's already beginning. Maybe a lot longer than we know. I don't know if it's going to be fast. That would be my natural inclination to want it to be fast, mm-hmm. like let's do it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're waiting for people to become 100% advanced on this planet, it's probably never going to happen. So that just can't be part of it.
No. But Are we, I asked you a question when we were going back and forth in email. Do you think disclosure is coming anytime soon as far as alien disclosure?
Oh, yeah. I think in the next 2 years, in fact, it started already with NASA saying that there were aliens and the Pentagon corroborating. Now they're trying to walk back on it. Or they got some, what do you call a person that tries to discredit?
Mm-hmm. Debunker type? Kind of a debunker?
Yeah, they had some debunker's article, and I'm going, he's not giving any proof of what he's debunking. Mm-hmm. He's just saying, no, the video's wrong. It's this. It's the them moving in the opposite direction of the plane makes it look odd. I mean, so they're trying to take it back a little bit, but I'm sure it's going to keep coming out. Mm-hmm. And that just gave everybody a lot of fuel.
Yeah, so I really feel that we could be, you know, if you start admitting that to the public, then you're going to have to probably admit a lot of things. And, you know, it seems like we are heading into a time of transparency where things are not going to remain hidden. And the only way we can move forward is really with those things to be released. And more of that seems to be happening. Some of the mighty are falling rather fast. And good. It's about time we move away from what was serving us before and move towards what we truly are, which are beings. Do you think that, you know, with all the talk of aliens and abductions and stuff that you don't quite understand, do you feel that these beings love you?
Yes.
And do you feel that this is what's happening is done out of love, even if we don't understand it?
Yes, I do.
And when I say love, they, go ahead, Byron.
They have cosmic consciousness. I've experienced quite a bit of it lately myself. And you do love, you even love the buttholes. Because you know they can't help what they're doing because they're machines programmed by their parents and society. And they've never questioned it, and they're not awake. They're mechanical. They're asleep. So they know not what they do.
It's kind of like the movie The Matrix.
Yes. Yes.
And so you.
I'm sure they knew that.
There are some that are, you know, and I think there are movies that come out and they try to show us a little bit of the truth. Certainly that's not exactly what's going on, but they try to show us a little bit of truth that we have the opportunity. And that's part of a movement as well. That's been going on in Hollywood to bring out. So it's not going to be so overwhelming when it truly does come out. Plus, I think there's been an agenda, and they said, listen, you're going to do this. We're going to give you time to ease it in. But ultimately, eventually, if you don't do that, it will be done for you. And generally, beings of love, from what I understand, they don't force themselves. But there is a certain timeline for things to change. We've had it this way for a long time. Glad you had fun. Glad you did chaos and war and pillaged and did all that. Good for you. And now, gently, we are going to move it back in this direction. And I see a lot of people on board with that. And I feel like you're a brother in many ways, and we are on the similar path, Byron.
Yes, me too. And it all reminds me of Childhood's End by Arthur C. Clarke.
Mm. Yes, it does have a similar ring to that, doesn't it? So, anything more you want to tell us? We've been on for like an hour and a half now, and I'm sure we could go on much longer. Any message you want to leave for abductees or just people in general?
Well, if you're having problems, if you're having fear, start talking to them. They hear you. If they abduct you more than once, you most likely have implants, and they hear everything that you think. So you can talk to them, and you can, like you asked, to see a gray. And repetition, you caught on. It takes a great deal of repetition. I think they have to know that you're actually sincere, because we want something for a little while and then we change our minds.
Mm-hmm.
So the more you ask for like one thing, like I just want a proof that you're abducting me. That's what I did in the long run when I first found out and I got it. But talk to them, say, make it a little easier. They were leaving, they were doing something to my hands with needles and putting these punctures in my hand, and then it was making these brown blotches. And I didn't like that.
I've got
enough going on just from being old about the brown blotches. And I started telling them I didn't like it at all, and I wanted to stop. It was about a week that it stopped, and it stopped for a month, and it was always on my right hand. And then one morning I got up, and there was one on my left hand, and I went, damn, I wanted y'all to stop. Well, by the end of the evening, the blotch was gone.
Huh.
So, and I've never had one of those brown blotches stay. And, like, they were the size of a dime or a quarter sometimes. They go away now. So somehow during that month, they changed something about their technology.
So
the way they did it.
The Grays, why are they taking people? We talked about, you know, crossbreeding, but they're probably not doing that with you anymore. Why do they keep taking you?
Maybe they agreed to drop in and comfort us, even though it didn't work out that way, since we came from there, a lot of us.
Hmm. So,
or they're just checking up, or they're making sure we're okay. I think they're doing a whole bunch of different things.
Yeah, I think maybe part of it could be encoding us, too, for, like, changes that are coming, allowing us to become more psychically gifted. You know, a lot of people that have experiences, a lot of people will say this, if you've been taken, your psychic ability gets more developed. So,
yes.
It's not just by
yesterday,
them. Go ahead.
Yesterday, sometimes in the morning, quite often, I will try to look and see what's going to happen during the day. And I saw myself at a store buying some firewood, because I was out of firewood until yesterday. Well, I had to go to town to buy food, so I went to town, and I was expecting maybe to see the firewood at the store. Nah, there was nothing there. I went to Walmart, got my groceries, came home, started fixing lunch, and I got it cooked, and I had forgotten the spaghetti sauce that I needed, so I just had to eat ground meat, cheese, and pistachios. No, cashews. Well, then I had to go back to town. I get parked and I look across from me. And there's a guy in a trailer truck selling bundles of firewood.
Hmm.
So I went into the store and I came out and he yelled, "Hey, I really like your hat." And five other people told me the same thing yesterday at Walmart the second time. So I go, "Thank you. How much is your firewood?" And he said, I've got three bundles left, and I'll give them to you for $15. So I got the firewood that I had seen myself getting at a store, and it was about the same amount that I had pictured. And it was $5 less, because I thought it was going to cost me $20.
Hmm.
But that's, you know, everything psychic is not always earth-shaking.
No. We're merely tapping into potential futures sometimes, or picking up somebody else's thought. And or just sensing other things. So, yeah, most of it is not, you know, when the phone's going to ring before it happens. Sometimes you'll get a thought on certain things going on. Even watching a sporting event, you'll know who's going to win. It'll just come to you. Unfortunately, I never make bets at that time, so then I don't profit from it. But maybe we're not meant to. Anyway, it's really great talking to you, Byron. Anything else you want to add to this conversation?
I think that's pretty much it, TJ.
We're definitely going to have to talk more, because we really didn't even get into so many other things that have happened in your life. And I know we did the first interview. We touched on things. The difference between this interview and the first one, again, going back to that, is Byron is now talking about believing that he came from another dimension. And you were kind of concerned about to talk about that, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. I did not think people would. Well, first off, what if I say I'm an alien soul, and then the aliens do show up, and there's fights, and these guys are going, hey, that man I was on the street over there is an alien. Get him. So for a long time, I just kept my mouth shut about
that.
Except I did put it in the book, but I didn't put flags on it.
Well, you know, I've talked to other people that feel the same way, so... You know, and then we talk about the star children and the star seeds. And, you know, if I'm to believe all of that that's being channeled and all of that information that psychics are picking up on, then there's many here that are from other worlds or other dimensions right now that are assisting in moving us forward. And that's where I take it to. That's where I kind of leave it off at, is that it's all part of
that's
what's
right.
going on.
Yeah.
It's all part of what's
yeah.
meant to go on. And it's always done in love. And it's never forced on anybody. So, well, other than being abducted, that's forced on you. But I mean, the moving forward of our evolution, if you want to call it that, just returning to what we are. It's not even evolving. It's returning to what we already are. And that's always done in love. And that's the way I look at everything. It's like you can't force anybody. You gently nudge them. And when they're ready, and when all of us are, majority of us are ready, then things will change. And it's nice to talk to you, Byron. It really is.
It was great talking to you, too.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.